You're listening to Two Sons of Tatooine. If there's a bright center to the universe, you're listening to the podcast that it's farthest from. And here are your hosts, Jonathan and Nathan.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Two Sons of Tatooine. I'm one of your hosts, Nathan, a.k.a. NB Bro, and joining me is my co-host, Jonathan Cohn. On this installment, we'll be asking the question, why did the Jedi fall? And just seeing where that takes us. That'll be our jumping off point, so at this time, I'm going to throw it to Jonathan. We've talked a little bit already about the state of the Jedi in the prequel era. So without rehashing that, let me throw it to you. Why do you think the Jedi fell?
Well, I think there's a lot of reasons, but I think the primary reason of why the Jedi fell comes down to that they lost sight of what was important. And what is important to do to the Jedi? To try to do the best they can to help others in the universe, to bring balance to the Force. Mm-hmm. And what it becomes for the Jedi is following strict, rigid, religious tradition and not following their hearts, not doing what they want to do. And so it becomes if as long as I follow these rules, everything's okay, but they lose sight of the fun, and not necessarily the fun, that may not be the right word, but the true purpose of it all. And that's why I think that they fell, is that they just lost their sight of purpose. What do you think about that?
I really like your point, just asking the question of what were they really supposed to be doing? And if they don't know that, and if it's not clear, and what if they all have different ideas of what that is? You know, it's an excellent question that the Jedi are keepers of the peace. But isn't mostly what we see them do fight? And how did that change? You know, in your opinion, when your job is a diplomat or, you know, to help protect, most of what you're doing is really just, you know, a formality, wouldn't you think? But during a war, obviously things change so much.
It's hard to determine, because during the pre-Clone Wars era, when Jedi fight, it is because they have exhausted the other alternatives. Jedi traditionally don't come out guns a-blazing. This is why the beginning of Episode 1 is so crucial. You know, Qui-Gon starts out with Obi-Wan coming in, walking in, ready to do diplomacy. And then, once the once they, you know, realize negotiations are not going to work, that's when they pull out the lightsabers. And so you think that's the right way to handle things as the Jedi. You do negotiations first, and then when that doesn't work, go to aggressive negotiations.
Yes, we're waiting for the joke. I love the joke.
Yeah, that was he's low-hanging fruit there.
No, I set you up for it. You had to take it.
Oh, okay, that's good. I love Episode 1 for so many reasons, but that's one of the reasons that it works so well, is it starts out showing you where the Jedi are, and then it leaves. At no point does Qui-Gon, after they start fighting, he doesn't seem to try to go back to the negotiating table. What would have been really smart is if he had brought Padme to the Trade Federation on Coruscant, because they had a Trade Federation senator, Lot Dard, and he would have totally talked with them, I think, especially if Qui-Gon was in the room with them. And he had almost as much power in the Trade Federation as Viceroy Gunray. They make Nuke Gunray seem a lot more powerful than he was, but he really wasn't the dude of the Trade Federation. And so I'm just thinking that maybe they could have tried to go around Gunray, and instead once they started fighting, they seemed to think that fighting was their only option.
That's a really interesting train of thought. And talking to him, he was probably in on it, wouldn't you guess? But at the same time, He was objecting in the Senate. You know, there's no proof. There is no proof, is what he said. So, well, obviously, they're going to have some kind of negotiations where it would probably be a little bit more formal on Coruscant. Jedi's not going to show up like a bouncer and be like, hey, we know. You know, there's going to be some kind of investigation. They could. Qui-Gon might take it into his own hands. Well, let me ask you this, okay? It seems to me that as the Jedi probably got more and more just sent out by the Senate. You find that, or in my estimation, were they probably really rare? They're probably really rare throughout regular Republic, just member planets. And their duties that occupied them, you know, dignitaries, senators, you know, the protectoral type missions. And I don't know they did, but what are some examples? Can you think of anything of where, you know, they were just so preoccupied that they definitely did not, you know, they missed their chance to be peacekeepers, to be just like genuine good guys?
Well, I guess one example is in Master and Apprentice, the novel by Claudia Gray, which is my favorite canon novel. It's really good. It's the only novel set before Episode One at the moment in the canon. And in that book, you have Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan going to basically be essentially serve as bodyguards for this queen on a planet that is currently has some like terrorists or like it has a faction that's trying to separate, and they try to do that through terrorist actions. And essentially, Obi-Wan and Qui-Gon, their goal in that book is to be guardians, not as much peacekeepers. And they're just their goal is not to settle the dispute. Their goal is to protect the queen. And while that's a laudable goal, and I get why they'd want Jedi to do that, I feel like the Jedi are best at negotiating because they're intimidating. Because you can set them in a room with both parties and be like, hey, who's the most powerful person here? Me. So what are you guys going to do? You're going to work this out. Because you don't want me mad at either of you. So they would. That's all they have to do each time, is they just have to get them in the room, and their fact that they're Jedi works for them. And I think that they basically get tired of doing that eventually, and that's why by the events of Episode 2, they've basically resigned to having to just be soldiers. And what I find really interesting, and this is kind of changing a topic a little bit, and I'm interested in hearing what you think, once they do the Military Creation Act, they instantly make the Jedi generals. And it makes me wonder, now that you have the military, why don't the Jedi then say, okay, now you have your military force, we're only going to arc as peacekeepers from now on. I'm really shocked that they said, because we have a military now, we have to lead them. It seems like, you know, that Mace Windu, we're keepers of the peace, not soldiers, just gets thrown out once Jar Jar supports the Chancellor. And so I just think that's quite interesting how quick the turnaround. What did you think about that?
Oh, yeah, really interesting. The Jedi that were, you know, monks and very detached emotionally and everything, peacekeepers, is the ideal anyway. All of a sudden, right, the battle tactics, they're having to be trained to strategize, and, you know, they're thrown out there. So it's a very, very, I mean, if I was a Jedi in that time and my life was going from, you know, yeah, I'm going to protect the senator and I'm going to do some meditation every day, and here I am learning from Jocasta Nu, hopefully not too much. And then all of a sudden I'm like, oh, yeah, you're going to be shipped out. We're sending you to war, you know. And that's, you know, as a Jedi, you're prepared for anything, but I'm not prepared for war. That's just all of a sudden you're thrust into this situation where I guess you don't even have a question of, you know, is your side right? You're just expected to fight. You're expected to go out and be a soldier. And follow orders and give orders and lead. So that's interesting.
Exactly. And it's interesting that there's a scene in the Clone Wars where Anakin is arguing with Tarkin about the merits of the Jedi Order and fighting. And it is quite interesting because I actually agree with Tarkin, and that's shocking for me to say, but I agree with Tarkin on most of his points in that the Jedi Code requires them not to go to a certain point when fighting, the enemy. You know, they can't just be heartless when needed. And they sometimes you need your generals to be like that. And it's the same reason why certain people just naturally shouldn't be president of the United States. Because as president, you need to make tough decisions. You need to be willing to send people out, people that are soldiers that you don't know personally, send them out into harm's way to potentially die for an objective, and you need to be okay with doing that. And it's Jedi have very big difficulty, and it's why you'd never want a pacifist to be in charge of the military. And Jedi aren't necessarily pacifists, but they can't go as far enough, but yet they seem to hope that if they take the position of the general, then they'll bring a more gentlemanly side to the war. They'll be more, you know, sophisticated in their warfare. They'll be civilized, as Obi-Wan would say.
So do you think they fell as a compromising of their ideals? And the way that they changed what their belief system was to become such a different lifestyle, and very suddenly, that is a big part of why they failed. And I think that's a good trail to follow. It's at least the question of, you know, the difference between killing droids and killing soldiers, which there were, we see alien races occasionally that are, but for the most part, they're just killing droids. Were it actual soldiers, that would have been, I feel like the Jedi would have had a lot more misgivings about the war. What do you think?
Well, here's what it's also goes to the argument of, I saw in a Facebook group I'm in, someone asked the question, was the rebellion's destruction of the Death Star a act of war, or was it a terrorist act? And I believe it was an act of war, because all of the people on the Death Star were either military personnel or contracted people to work on the Death Star, whether they be janitors or whether they be, you know,
fry cooks. People. I mean, they have French fries on the Death Star.
All of them. I'm thinking of that robot chicken.
Yeah,
sketch
that's
where
exactly
the Jedi
what I was thinking.
Undercover.
I'm not gonna lie. Okay. Even the turkey club.
But there are people on there who aren't necessarily military personnel, but whenever you go work either on a military installation or for the military, you are running the risk of being part of the casualty of war, because you are on the base. You are as working for the military in this aspect. So it's fair game when they blow up the Death Star. So that's why I believe that the destruction of the Death Star is okay. Same with the destruction of just a Star Destroyer. They might be someone on there who's not an Imperial soldier, but it's still a Star Destroyer. It's a military piece of equipment. It's a military group that's part of it, and you are working for that group. And so that's why with the back with the Jedi, if they're having to fight someone, whether it be an alien or whether it be droids, they are part of the military group. So it is essentially as, it's almost as if they are not, you know, aren't individuals. Now, that doesn't mean that the Jedi should completely just be heartless and not even treat their prisoners right. If they get a prisoner, they have to treat them humanely, like we do in real life. But they shouldn't be, you know, heartbroken over having to kill an enemy insurgent, because that's an insurgent, that's part of the enemy. And I think that they have that problem where even one life hurts the Jedi loss. And while you think that's admirable, that's not what you want in your generals. Mm. And that's why I think that that's a big problem of why they lost their purpose, because they are not, just by design, good generals.
I don't want to get off topic, but my mind does go to Dooku, and how Anakin killed him felt just a little different. And obviously being egged on by Sidious, but a defenseless opponent at that point who was disarmed. Obviously at that point, you know, Anakin was kind of on the border, but war had probably prepared him to do that.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to if there was no war and he hadn't killed generals, and I know mainly droids, like we said, but I mean, there's a level of numbness that I would assume that as you become more callous to killing, you're just more easily to do the things that you would never see yourself doing, like decapitating a defenseless person.
And it is an interesting contrast of he has no problem killing Dooku when he literally has two lightsabers around his head. But when Sidious, who literally was shooting lightning at Mace Windu, he says he must stand trial.
Okay. Now,
and he says,
I don't want to jump ahead because I want to talk about that later when we talk about Anakin, okay?
Okay,
that's a big pivotal moment.
Okay, we'll talk about that later. But
we'll come back to that this episode. Okay.
Okay.
We have to.
But that is an interesting dichotomy of that. But backing up, yeah, it is interesting how the war does prepare them to make difficult decisions. And you look at, you know, Obi-Wan and and Yoda going to the temple and just hacking down their own troops during after Order 66.
Right.
You're kind of like, they might have known. That was Gary, the clone trooper. They might know who that was. But at the same time, you have to think, those guys have completely turned on them. And, you know, in a war, if someone's shooting at you, they're fair game. And the, and so at that, that was the only, that's one of the reasons why Yoda and Obi-Wan, I feel like it's okay that they survived, because they realized when to draw the line after Order 66 happened. And so they essentially became the Jedi that they needed to be after Order 66, which is a really morbid thought, because they went from, like, you know, 10,000 Jedi to only a handful. But that's, I think that that Order 66 almost, like, cleansed the Jedi almost. That sounds really bad. It almost cleansed the Jedi, kind of like, you know, the Darth Bane cleansed the Sith.
When I think about Yoda and Obi-Wan Kenobi, is in this instance you're talking about, the emotional detachment from these clone troopers that they may have known was considerably, you know, that aspect of them was considerably different from the way that Ahsoka viewed her clones. Yeah. And at that point, she's not a Jedi. She's, in fact, way more in touch with her emotion and her connections. And I feel like that's a great contrast. Perhaps, you know, Anakin being the same way, his connection to some of the clones, if theoretically that he had not turned, you know, how would he have handled the clones under his charge? I, especially if we're talking about Clone Wars Anakin, I feel like he would not have, you know, he would not have cut down clone troopers like Jesse or Rex with the same ease that, or detachment that Obi-Wan and Yoda did. Do you?
I think it's just because Anakin and Ahsoka actually didn't follow the traditional rules of the Jedi, in that they didn't form attachments to their clones. Or, sorry, they did form attachments.
They did, when they
weren't supposed, sorry, I was...
No, it's okay.
Mind blanked for a second. They did form attachments, and then you look at, you know, the rest of the Jedi were following the code. And so it matches up that not only does Anakin form attachments to Padme, he forms attachments to Ahsoka, he forms attachments to Rex, to the other clone troopers, and it shows how much a very different Jedi he is. And I know we've talked about, we might want to do like a what if episode, and I would love to do an entire episode on what if the Jedi allowed attachments, like how things would have been totally different. Because I think there would be no Order 66, Palpatine would have been totally destroyed, all that stuff, if the Jedi had allowed attachments. But
that's another time.
Well, that's a very different topic. You go ahead.
Let me give... I've jotted down a couple thoughts. So, reasons that I feel like the Jedi as a whole fell. You know, the detachment, to a degree, that's good, but not all attachments are bad.
Yeah.
If you look at Anakin not being allowed to go back to kind of, you know, save his mom on Tatooine, you know, that was bad. And having him not do that resulted in really bad things. Death of, you know, a lot of sand people. They noticed that Anakin was too eager to, or like if any Jedi was too eager to advance, you know, or arrogant, they would, you know, hold him back, try and teach him patience, you know, and perhaps not all Jedi held to the same level of emotional attachment, but the fact that connections were forbidden just encouraged many Jedi to break the rules. I feel like So let's talk for a second about Mace and Yoda's discussion when they say it may be time to inform the Senate that our ability to use the Force has diminished, and they're talking about predicting the future, right? Precognition.
Yeah.
Yoda's like, no, we shouldn't do that. Our adversaries multiply. You know, they would multiply. But they were afraid, and obviously Sidious, you know, he was the dark side, right? He was the one who was, you know, obviously clouding all their vision. But they fell in that moment when they decided to do nothing. They decided, let's just not tell anybody. If we tell anybody, things will only get worse. No, if you don't tell anybody, well, then whoever's been doing this to cloud your vision, they're going to sneak right up and, you know, snatch your bottom to put it.
And it's interesting in that, you know, they say, you know, let's just not tell anyone. And it's one thing that really confuses me whenever I read or watch something Star Wars is when a character uses any Force ability, the other characters around them are like, you're a Jedi? This person could have no connection to the Order, no training or anything. They just happen to use the Force a little, and someone assumes they're Jedi. But there's so many different ways that people connect to the Force that the Jedi aren't the only sect. And I think that it might have been smart for Yoda and Mace Windu maybe going to the Senate. It was not the wise thing, because as they said, their enemies multiply.
Yes, yeah.
But maybe they could have found Maz Kanata, because she was out there and she understands the Force better than a lot of people. And I think that she could have provided them with some very good wisdom on that.
But you can go to Mon Mothma. You can go to Bail Organa right away.
Well, they didn't, again, they didn't know who specifically was there. I think they knew at this point that there was an enemy in the Senate, and so they almost felt like no person in the Senate was trustworthy, and so they had to be very careful who they trusted. So I feel like they could have gone outside the Senate, but there's ample areas of outside the Jedi. They make it seem like only the Jedi and the Sith are the only two sects of Force users, almost. They limit themselves to that. If they tell anyone, they'd be telling the Sith. And it's like, no, there's other groups. Like, you even see in Rogue One, you have with the Jedi Temple on Jedha, you mm-hmm. have Baze and Churrit. And Churrit, you know, is very much a Force believer, and he's a very wise individual. And he works at, I don't know if this is during the time of the Jedi or this was before, but at some point, he worked for the Jedi. But he himself was not a Jedi, but he understood the Force, and he's someone they could talk to as well. And so I feel like they had ample opportunity to talk to people who weren't in the Senate and who weren't Sith, who would have understood their problem and maybe been able to help. And that's also a big problem, is that they just didn't know when to ask for help. They just relied on themselves.
Yeah, I don't know how many of those people are out there that would have fit.
Oh, there's a bunch.
You know, there was enough to combine into this rebellion later on, and a lot of them would have survived had it not been for mm-hmm. Order 66 sneaking up. But like you said, you didn't know who. I'm not sure that I know who if I had to make a list either. But at the very least, let's say that they'd gone to the Senate and they had, you know, they had at least been open about some of their issues. Would the Senate have just, you know, hey, we need to at least be more scrutinous. We need to question these things, because this is a serious thing. Because obviously, let's say the Senate is trusting the Jedi. Always have, right? The Jedi, they have the ability to predict the future. They will tell us, well, all of a sudden, under this assumption that things are going to be fine, or we'll be let, yeah, they'll for sure let us know if something bad they see in the future. If they lose that ability but don't tell you, you know, that's like driving with somebody that's blind, being a passenger. You know, you're like, hey, we're fine. Oh, I was going to tell you, I'm losing my vision, but I was worried that you wouldn't get in the car with me if I told you.
It is interesting that the Jedi are almost afraid of losing their position if they admit their weakness.
Fear
and
leads to the dark side.
Indeed. And if you look at, you know, why would the Jedi, just the Jedi as a whole, be willing to join the military and be generals when they had no military training and they were not prepared for it? It's because they were being offered to become generals. The power position jumps significantly.
I love
that. And
if
the Jedi,
great
observation. If the Jedi were purely, you know, altruistic and only had the goal of the Force in mind, then that wouldn't have even been a factor. But you see how excited even Ahsoka, we talk about how good of a Jedi Ahsoka can be. At the very beginning of the Clone Wars, she's excited to become a general. She just wants to learn things. And it's not just because she wants to learn, it's because she wants to have power over Rex. That's why she fixates in the beginning when she meets him on, well, you're a captain, but I outrank you because I'm a Jedi. It seems like the Jedi instill the Padawans with this power type focus. That's all. You also have the council. You have this hierarchy of leadership. Now, I believe it's good to have a council, because otherwise all the Jedi would be doing stuff with no oversight. And that's why it's good to have a group in charge and then have someone in charge of the group in charge. But with that hierarchy instills this view of power between the Jedi and the non-Jedi, and I think that also ties into why they fell.
Mm. It must have felt really good to have that gifted to you all of a sudden. In a life of humility, I would feel like that's a fair description, right? The Jedi life is one of humility. You have great power, not like Spider-Man, you have great responsibility. You have the responsibility. But the Jedi robes are a symbol of, their association with the lowly. We're not going to be, adorning ourselves, the same way that you would if they were wealthy, whatever. But that, all of a sudden, just, you get this power, general, the title. I love that you observe that, and that's just, in my mind, that places another context, another layer. Not that it would have affected every Jedi, because clearly some of the older Jedi are more mature, and it has absolutely no effect. They're detached from that, it doesn't mean anything to them. They're still doing their duty, but certainly it would have affected some, and I think Ahsoka's a good example, but she grows through it. She grows through that, and, this might be a good time to kind of ask, if I could transition, you tell me if it's okay to go on, but...
Yeah, go ahead.
Really, the second half of why did the Jedi fall? Let's look specifically at Anakin, okay? Mm-hmm. Anakin is kind of the Avatar for the Jedi. If he doesn't fall, the Avatar. We all just binged Avatar this week, everybody did, because it came out on Netflix. I watched it all in 4 days. It was phenomenal. Okay, so... so, Anakin, yes, he fell, and I wrote down one word, okay? Why did he fall? Because those that were around him were in denial. They were denying all of the signs that they had seen. Okay? Are you with you with me so far?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Kenobi. Let's talk about Obi-Wan first. There's a line where he says, he's talking with Mace and Yoda, he says, "He will not let me down. He never has."
Mm-hmm.
That was said with so much uncertainty in his voice, you know? I feel like he is trying to convince himself, saying that Anakin will be fine, because he's seen plenty of times that Anakin has, well, technically let him down, probably not in the battle or in a lot of ways is where he would speak out of turn, or not show respect, or not follow the code, or not follow the council's instructions. I mean, can you not think of many, many, many times where he's let him down? But
well, the most prominent time I think of is the Mortis arc when Anakin he literally falls to the dark side. Like, you cannot let Obi-Wan down more than that. And yes, it was partially like a mind game because of the son's manipulation. That's a deep conversation, but that's the most prominent time where Anakin literally for a time fell to the dark side. And so to say he's never let you down, it's just like, yeah, keep telling yourself that, Obi-Wan.
Yeah.
I don't believe it, though.
He was really trying hard to convince them. But he's just as hard to convince himself. And if he had sat down with Anakin, maybe, and was more frank and dealt more closely with some of the issues, maybe we don't have Vader. I don't know. Let's talk about Ahsoka.
Exactly.
We just talked about the Clone Wars finale. And let's just really quickly talk about the moment when Maul says to her, "Skywalker's being groomed as the apprentice of Darth Sidious." What's her reaction?
Yeah. Denial.
Exactly. Denial, right? She is, and maybe Anakin is being propped up. He's being lifted up by all the people around him who believe in him. And just so happened that those people didn't believe in him as much as it turned out that Palpatine did. All right, let's go to Padme. Okay?
Yeah.
She literally, he tells Padme, "Hey, I killed them." And if you're a prequel member out there, you know what's next. And not just the men, but the women and the children, too. I love prequel memes. If you haven't checked out subreddit prequel memes. So she's definitely in denial. She's seen a dark side. And I know he did confess that to Yoda, I believe, didn't he? Anakin?
I don't. It's been so long since I watched episodes 2 and 3.
He may have. But if he did it, a serious oversight for Padme, at least, to not tell anybody, "Hey, he did this." But let's look at, I pulled up some dialogue, and you probably, you guys, if you're out there and you think that Anakin and Padme had some of the cringiest dialogue, we agree.
Right.
We agree. But I feel like there's one that's pretty good because in I believe she's pregnant at the time, in Revenge of the Sith, Anakin says, "You're so beautiful." And she says, "It's only because I'm so in love." And he says, no, it's because I'm so in love with you. And you're like, oh, this is cringeworthy. Then she says the line, then love has blinded you. And he's like, well, that's not exactly what I meant, but it's probably too. I think love had blinded her.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Love had blinded her, and she was in denial about him. Now, yes, it probably blinded him to a degree, too, you know, but it way, way more it blinded her to his. And I think a lot of relationships are like that. You don't want to see the darkest part of that person, and you're really, really afraid to open up fully and let that person see all of you. But when Anakin kind of let her see, oh, yeah, I kill sand people, by the way. That's him saying, hey, this is me, all of me. And then he feels like it's kind of laying it on her lap. This is on you now. You got this. You know, you can keep me in check.
It's the reason behind why a family member should be allowed to testify, but they should not be allowed to be on the jury, because they can understand the person better than the jury can, and so they can provide a witness if, when you fell in love with the person, your spouse, that you really believe that that was not in them. You can explain that to them, and you explained, this is not normally what my spouse would do if the charge is that they killed someone. But you may be so adamant that that did not happen that you are blind to the fact that you can't say, hey, my spouse didn't do this, so that's why you shouldn't be allowed in determining what their fate should be. So I think Padme's partially blinded. I think that it's more that she sees it.
Yeah.
She just doesn't really care because, one, she's got a lot on her plate. She's got the kids coming. She's got a little planet that she's representing in the Senate. She's got the war that she's trying to deal with. So I think that it's just that she's just like, okay, I see that Anakin's being a bit weird, but that's like number 5 on my to-do list just to fix that. So, like, you know, him killing Tusken Raiders, that's bad, you know, but, you know, Dooku wants me dead, so that's a bit higher in my priorities, so.
Just another quick example, when they're on the, they're in episode 2 and they're, you know, frolicking in the, with the little mud moose kind of fat creatures and everything, and rolling around in the flowers, they talk about the government, and he says, what we should do is this, and she's like, well, that sounds like a dictatorship. He says, well, if it works. She's like, you're messing with me. No, that's... he was flirting, but he was also, like, kind of like, you know, this is kind of what I think, you know?
And hey, he gets his wish.
He does. He does, exactly.
He has one person who makes the decisions, and he became the enforcer of those decisions. It's exactly... That's why, even though that dialogue is so cringy, it's so brilliant in how it sets up, you know, the original trilogy. Like, even in the cringiest moments of Lucas's dialogue, it has some of the most profound foreshadowing. So that's why I think that, you know, even though episode 2 is my least favorite Star Wars film, I still think that when I think about that scene, which is one of my least favorite scenes, I think, wow, there's so much depth in there, despite the poor language in the writing.
Another one that comes to mind, I'm like, and I always wanted Anakin to be awesome, but when I think it's Dooku says to him, like, you know, I thought you would have learned your lesson by now. And he says, I am a slow learner. I'm like, come on, can't you come up with a better one-liner than that? And you're Anakin. I thought you were a fast learner, you know? Maybe there's more depth to that line. If there's more depth, you know, leave us a comment and tell me. Explain that line to me. If I was writing the dialogue, I would have been like, oh, yeah, well, I'm about to, why, you know? It would have been something, you know, bold and bombastic and provocative, but it would have been a let's root for Anakin moment, because at that time we're still doing that. Okay, so we've already, like, the first point that I made was denial. Maybe the ones around him were holding Anakin up, and he fell when, you know, I guess they weren't enough to keep him together anymore. Padme, Ahsoka, and Obi-Wan. Their belief in him. And their denial to not confront him together about some of the things that they saw, the warning signs. If they had done that, then maybe we would have not gotten Vader. Okay, let me go towards the next little trail that I've got, okay? Mace Windu. Okay?
Yeah.
Follow me on this one, because I may, like, read way far into this, and you tell me if I'm wrong. Okay? But let's talk about Phantom Menace. Anakin, one of his first memories of Mace is, you know, this guy is, he is not liking me very, and he's cold towards everybody. I think that's one of Mace Windu's kind of defining characteristics. Yeah. But Anakin knew from the beginning that, like, of the top two guys, one of them did not like him at all and did not want him to be trained. So, I mean, I'm just putting myself in his shoes a little bit. But growing up, if I knew that an authority figure over me, somebody that's, like, controlling of my destiny almost, didn't like me, you know, it's like kind of like Harry Potter with his, you know, horrible aunt and uncle. You know, everything that they do, even if it was neutral to me, I would view it in a context that was negative. I would feel like they were out to get me. They're looking over my shoulder. Man, these guys, you know, they don't ever give me a break. They don't give me credit when I do something right. You know, here I am. I did the dishes, but there are other kids over there watching TV, and they just get extra dessert, and where I get sent to bed. Okay, but I'm going too far into an allegory. But my point is, Mace never said, you know, hey, you can have a fresh slate. Anakin, I understand this happened, but you're being trained now. You know, hey, you're a Jedi. You're going to become a Jedi if the prophecy is true. I'm going to give you a fair shake, you know? He never says that, and so Anakin constantly has this doubt. There's a couple places, right? In Revenge of the Sith, like, Mace says it's very dangerous putting them together, talking about Palpatine and Anakin. Says, I don't think the boy can handle it. I don't trust him. And then later on, Anakin comes to Mace, and, you know, he says, hey, Palpatine's a Sith Lord. And Mace is like, well, if what you've said is true, you'll have earned my trust. So Anakin, even then, he knows he doesn't have Mace Windu's trust. Yeah. Like, and Mace Windu, wouldn't you say, I know I'm talking a lot, he's kind of the avatar for, like, this is the dude for the Jedi way, the most traditional. We've already talked about that, right? There was no guy that was more strict with the rules. Okay, and this is kind of why I paused you before earlier, because I'm building something. You told me if you know where I'm going. But anyway, this, you know, employer almost that Mace would be, you know, he's out to get him. Like, how can you advance in your job if your job employer does not like you, is not giving you credit for the work that you do? I mean, Anakin definitely felt like he was holding his own and doing stuff that masters couldn't even do. And yes, arrogant, would you say? Yeah. But yeah. Some of his feats, would you think that he was justified to think, hey, my feats are on the level of a Jedi Master. I should be a Master. I'm way stronger than these guys that are Masters. I've done more of this and yada yada.
It's the concept of moving the goalposts. Because there were times, and I felt this, where you feel like there's a different standard between what you and other people do, and when you try to meet what you think your standard is and they still don't like you or still don't trust you, then it just becomes aggravating because, hey, I did everything I'm supposed to do and you still don't trust me. I'm very mad at you now. You know, in school, for me, it was because I was the headmaster's kid. It felt like it was very hard for me to do anything, to get the lead role in the play, to be able to be the head of a council on, you know, SGA or something, because I had to work extra hard to prove that I wasn't just getting it because my dad was the headmaster. And then I'd work extra hard to try to get it. And for some reason, if it was an appointed position, I still wouldn't get it.
Right.
And there were other things that, you know, that's a really long tangent. But it's like, you know, Anakin feels, hey, my powers are way above anyone else's. Right. And they don't give him the rank of master. And then he really does a good job, like, of anyone. He has a very good win-loss ratio in the Clone Wars.
Oh, yeah.
Particularly since, you know, they're not going to show him losing all the time in the Clone Wars TV series. So from what we see, it's a very good win-loss ratio. So he, in his mind, he's thinking, man, I'm doing so great. Why don't you guys trust me now? I've won, like, 37 battles in 3 years. Like, not even Patton has that kind of a record. he's just like, hey, look at how good I'm doing, and you still don't trust me. Yeah, and even when Ahsoka leaves, he goes after her and tries to convince her to come back. Like, hey, if that's not enough to show you that you should trust him, maybe, I don't know what is
yeah.
to show to trust him, because he tries to convince her to stay with the Order. And by them not making him a master at that moment, I think, is one of the reasons that he ends up falling, is because that's like the straw that breaks the camel's back, in that he's like, all right, well, now that Ahsoka doesn't trust them and she won't come back and they won't trust me, I'm just going to start falling to the dark side. Not consciously, but subconsciously. So I definitely think that's an aspect of it.
And he was getting the, we talked about earlier, the title of general, right? I feel like for mm-hmm. him, that was, he had a father figure behind the scenes for years, encouraging mm-hmm. him, you know, treating him way better than Obi-Wan, and for sure way better than Mace did. And who is it? Well, it's Palpatine. Palpatine was grooming him for that. Like, Palpatine,
yeah.
I mean, I'm sure he was kind of, I wouldn't say like his sugar daddy. I don't know the context of that. But
no, that's not, no.
That's not
no,
what I mean.
That is not the right not phrase. What I mean. No, don't. That's not, no. That is was, not. If there's a facepalm sound, if you know.
He was, ugh. But he was, he would spoil him, you know. He would treat him really well, he would compliment him, you know. He would suggest him will, for the instant thing. Go ahead.
I will take this in the direction that is opposite of what you were going.
Okay, please do.
because I'm not going to rehash his whole thing, but Dave Filoni has this really good monologue in the most recent episodes of the Mandalorian documentary, and we'll talk about it more when we discuss that. But in the Mandalorian documentary, he discusses how the entirety of Star Wars, from the prequels to the original trilogy to the sequels, is not only about family, but it's about having a good father figure in your life, and how Anakin needs Qui-Gon to be the right father figure. And that's why Duel of the Fates is so important, because the most important part of Duel of Fates is that Qui-Gon survive to become the father. Because Qui-Gon doesn't, Obi-Wan does. But Obi-Wan's not the right father. Obi-Wan's a brother. A brother isn't the same thing as a father. So that's why Obi-Wan's not good enough to train Anakin. And that's why the things lead you down the road. And when Anakin Vader, in Return of the Jedi, realizes that he needs to become the father that he never had to Luke, when Palpatine, who almost was a father figure to him, albeit a bad father figure, is electrocuting and trying to kill his own Vader's son. Vader Anakin realizes that, hey, this is my opportunity to step up and to be who I never had. Mm. And so that's why it all, as George says, it's like poetry. It rhymes. You know, it all ties together. It all works together, because that's why, that's one of the reasons I have no problem with a new character being related to someone else, because intrinsically, Star Wars is about family. And so that's a part of the reason the Jedi fell, is that they can't have family, as going to that concept of attachments that we were talking right. about earlier.
I appreciate that Filoni brought that out. That is so insightful. And,
oh, yeah.
And instantly when you hear it, you say, of course it was. okay, let me finish my point, all right? This is the thing that I paused mm-hmm. you on earlier, all right?
Yeah.
And this is I think, the last straw, the real last straw. It could have been the master, you know, not getting master. But I feel like this is probably the real last straw. So we talked about yeah. earlier, Mace is the guy, right? The Jedi way.
Mm-hmm.
All right. The moment in which Anakin confronts the two, you know, Mace, Palpatine, and Mace is, you know, he's holding a saber over him, and, you know, of course Anakin starts to debate. He says, no, this, you can't kill him, you know, but Windu, he is willing at that point to break his own belief system, going fully against the Jedi way, and that one thing, the fact that he was willing to kill, and Anakin's like, no, but you're the guy, we gotta follow the rules, you're the guy, you mean we follow the rules, this is the Jedi way. And, you know, Mace is the guy, and the moment that he falls into letting that fear, you know, over the dark side, over Palpatine, I feel like that's the moment that cemented the fall of the Jedi for Anakin. The top Jedi Master, let's say bad mother rule follower, being willing to kill with no trial, you know, the ideals of the Jedi ceased to exist for Anakin. And when he saw that, it was over.
Yeah, I do think that is a good piece of information, that him seeing the rule follower not follow the rules is an important like last straw for him. I definitely can see that and understand that aspect of it. That definitely makes sense. This is a side note, but I would, knowing what I know, I would have no problem if I was in Mace's shoes, just go ahead and kill him. Even when debating with Anakin, I would have just like, kill him. Doesn't
sorry,
matter.
Sorry,
I would
Anakin.
Sleep. I would sleep fine at night knowing that I had killed Sidious. Like, no problem. Once I saw that red lightsaber, I was like, okay, you're dead. You're dead to me. You may as well be.
Did you? So. There was a meme on prequel memes this week. It was the top panel said Anakin, you know, it was Sidious on the ground, and he was, you know, on, it was the scene, right? He just, mm-hmm. you know, and he says, I'm the one who has the power to save the one that you love. And Anakin says, to Palpatine, he says, but you're okay, you're right there. And then it shows Palpatine with the big smile on his face. He's the grand.
Oh, that's taken that in another weird direction.
The father figure. Come on.
That's entirely what that meant, I'm sure.
Oh, it's okay. Yeah. All right.
All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we will announce our topic for show number 5. All right. So, Nathan, do you want to announce what our topic for show number 5 is going to be?
I would be glad to. We will be discussing the first 4 episodes of Disney Gallery, Star Wars, The Mandalorian, the documentary on Disney Plus, and some of the insights that we both gleaned from watching those episodes.
And man, are there so many insights from those episodes. The 4th episode blew my mind, I'm just saying. So I'm excited to hear what you have to think, hear what perhaps our listeners have to think, but until next time, I'm Jonathan.
And I am Nathan, a.k.a. MP Bro.
And thank you for listening to Two Sons of Tatooine.